You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
We are halfway through spring training, and the Diamondbacks are, like everybody, preparing for their season. Let's catch up with Steve Gilbert. I'm Allison Footer. Steve, let's start off with A.J. Pollock. You know, alarm bells, I think, are going to go off anytime there's any kind of injury issues attached to him, because given what has happened to him in the recent past. So he left the game with groin tightness. What is the update on that?
Yeah, Allison, you know, we talked to him this morning, and one of the things that he said was, you know, because he also had the fractured elbow last year, and that kept him out for most of the season. But when he came back, he ended up missing the latter part of the season because of a groin injury in that same area. So as soon as he started to feel a little tightness or a little discomfort there while rounding the bases after a home run, ironically, he said he got a little nervous. But after checking it out, they feel like it's nothing serious, and he hopes to be back in the lineup in the next couple of days. And he's looking at it as a positive, in the sense that he thinks that after the injury went away into the off season last year, he stopped focusing on doing any exercises or anything that he needed to do to keep that groin healthy, that groin muscle healthy. So he thinks this is a reminder for him that he needs to stay on top of that and kind of incorporate that into his daily routine.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to Shelby Miller. Let's just get a little update on him, because, of course, we're going to keep talking about him as he tries to put together a season that the Diamondbacks were hoping for when they acquired him. So what kind of spring is he having?
Yeah, he's had a really good spring, Allison. He had one rough outing, but outside of that, he's thrown the ball well. Threw in a minor league game the other day, just because they wanted to get somebody else into a big league game, and they felt like, you know, he's been showing enough what he could do so far. I mean, he touched 99 on the radar gun against the Cubs in a night game earlier this spring. He's looked good, again, aside from that one outing. And they're certainly feeling a lot better about what they're seeing from him this spring as opposed to last spring, and certainly what they saw from him during last season. So that's a big thing for them, obviously, counting on him to be a big part of that rotation. And if he's able to do that and be a big contributor, that certainly helps them.
Yeah, does he come off as a confident guy, like just when you're, you know, dealing with him as a person and not a pitcher, when you're talking to him and everything? What kind of guy is he?
I think, you know, you can see from Shelby this spring that he's very confident, and I think it's kind of carried over from, you know, the way his offseason went and the way his spring training started out for him. The confidence has kind of been building. Sorry, I laugh here just because he walked by me as I was talking about him, and he looked at me kind of strange, but... I think the confidence is building for him based on, kind of having a fresh start here. He ended the season well with a couple of shutout starts. So it seems like right now he's in a better place than he was in last spring, when there was a lot of pressure around him and he wasn't necessarily having a very good spring.
So on a different note, let's talk to Yasmani Tomas. He's not having a good spring at all. He is not hitting. How disconcerting is that?
Well, if by not a good spring you mean hitless and 17 at bats, yeah, that's right.
That's what I mean.
Yep. Yeah, and he's had a little bit of back tightness here, so he's been out for 3 or 4 days as well. So, things not exactly going to plan for him so far this spring. Torrey Lovello thinks that maybe he's a little jumpy at the plate right now. So we'll see, and those adjustments that they would like him to make at the plate to be less jumpy, we haven't got a chance to see, because, like I said, he's missed the past the 3 or 4 games with some back tightness. So still plenty of time for him to get back on track, but certainly not the kind of start that he wanted to have through spring training, for sure.
And how about Archie Bradley? Seems like he's maybe coming along. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know what grade to give him. Maybe a B- as far as spring performances?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard with Archie, because he says he's working on some things. He's working on improving his changeup. That's been kind of a thing for him ever since he was drafted. Was, you know, trying to make sure that he has a third pitch to go with his fastball and his curve. So he's throwing his changeup more this spring, and he's had a couple of rough outings with it. And again, he says it's because he's working on that, and also a cut fastball, which he used in the Arizona Fall League very effectively in 2014, and then kind of got away from using. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see the decision that they have to make on that fifth spot in the rotation, if it comes down to Archie Bradley and Patrick Corbin. how that ends up turning out, because certainly you start to look at the rotation. If you got Zach Greinke and Shelby Miller and Robbie Ray and Taiwan Walker, who's having a tremendous spring, it kind of leads you to believe that it could be kind of an uphill battle for Archie, but we'll see how that all plays out.
Have you been watching the WBC? I know Paul Goldschmidt, a key player for the Diamondbacks, is playing with Team USA. Have you caught any of these games? It's been pretty riveting. It seems, I've been talking to some of the other reporters about this, seems to be some heightened interest in it this year, and I think because there's a lot of stars from a lot of teams who are participating. It's kind of nice, huh, to have something different to concentrate on during spring training?
Yeah, it seems like these games have had some real exciting finishes, too, and to see the passion and some of these crowds and some of the way that the players have been playing, I think that's been kind of a neat thing to see. I know Paul Goldschmidt was really excited about getting to go and play for Team USA, and so that's been a big deal for him. And I know we were following it that first day because he got pinch hit for it immediately. Everyone was wondering, was something wrong with Paul Goldschmidt? So the question seemed to catch Torrey Lovello off guard when the first day we're asking him, hey, is Paul Goldschmidt okay? He's like, yeah, I just talked to him on the phone. Everything's fine. Why? And, you know, of course, you're always kind of watching from afar and you see a guy get pinch hit for you. You just never know. But apparently he is fine and enjoying his time with Team USA.
Yeah. Jim Leland has quite a task ahead of him to get playing time for guys that are trying to get ready for a season, trying to win baseball games and trying not to make any general managers mad about how he handles the pitching staff. So, wow, that seems like a really great gig, is to be a manager of a WBC team.
It sounds like kind of a thankless gig is what it sounds like.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, Steve, thanks a lot. Get back to it. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Allison. Thank you.
The Giants are a couple of weeks from opening day, as is everyone, and their roster seems to be coming together a little bit, but there are still some outstanding issues that need to be addressed. Let's talk to Chris Heft about all of that. I am Allison Fitter. Chris, Bobby Evans was on the radio today, I guess, talking a little Matt Cain. So sounds like he's not real encouraged by the spring that Matt is having. What did you glean from that interview?
I gleaned that Matt better throw real well in the next outing or two, or the Giants are going to have to do something creative. Now, one of the things Bobby said was, you know, Matt's earning $20, $21 million this year. Bobby said, or in so many words, he said he would not hesitate to, quote-unquote, you know, eat the contract. So they're not going to, in short, they won't keep Matt just to pay him, you know, not to waste his salary. They're going to do what they have to do to send the five best spring camp with the five best starters, and, you know, if he's one of them, so be it. But if not, it's going to be, somebody else, maybe like Ty Block, who happens to pitch in today's game.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to a pitcher, it's, you know, even if the team is on the hook for all that money, I mean, sometimes with a hitter, an older guy, you can sort of justify keeping him around a little bit just because he'll be able to do something, make contact, move runners over, hit a fly ball, bring somebody in. I mean, there's certain ways that you might be able to use them. You can prolong the inevitable. But when it comes to a pitcher, I mean, if he's not getting anybody out, you can't just have him go out there every 5 days just because you're paying him X amount of dollars. So I guess it really doesn't really leave them a choice if they have better options. And certainly the Giants have better options.
There's that saying, Allison, I know you've heard it, you know, the hitters tell you, you know, how a pitcher's throwing. And, you know, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but it's definitely exceeded the ratios for Matt have definitely exceeded, you know, one hit per inning, which is not good. And he's not getting a whole lot of swings and misses. Bobby spoke optimistically about trying to help Matt with his improve his deception, but that just doesn't come overnight. So the rest of the spring is going to be, you know, quite intriguing.
Yeah, it's if he's not having success against hitters right now that are not in full, you know, in regular season mode yet, I just can't imagine what would happen when, you know, the bell rings in April and, you know, these guys are a little bit locked in with their swings, their timing's down. You've covered so many spring trainings, and I mean, I've covered a ton of them. I remember Woody Williams, and of course, Matt Cain is much younger than these guys, but I remember Woody Williams, like, watching the end of his career inevitably arrive when he was not having any luck during spring training, any success. And you hate to see it happen. At some point, when it goes, it goes. It's just, it's hard to watch.
Yes. not to get too philosophical here, but there's that saying that an athlete dies twice, and it's rough enough seeing that first death, so to speak. You know, for those of us who've seen a particular athlete maybe, you know, at the peak of his career, you know, perform so well, and then all of a sudden it just can't do it anymore. It is rough to witness.
Yeah, it's the injuries. Once you have an arm injury with a pitcher, it's so hard to ever be the same. So, okay, well, let's go on to less depressing topics. So let's talk a little bit about the bullpen. Albert Suarez, so they seem to be sort of stretching him out to be a spot starter, but he's mostly ticketed for, like, middle relief, long relief. Is that, I mean, that's kind of his role, right?
Yeah, I think his role just might end up being pitcher. You know, not to sound like a smart aleck, but, you know, whenever they need him for, that's what he would do. If they need him for long relief, great. If they need him for, you know, to coin a phrase, intermediate relief, to throw two innings instead of like four or five, you know, maybe they'd use him for that and save the rest of the bullpen. Or, you know, on rare occasions, if Bruce Bochy just wanted him to get a couple guys out in an inning, you know, and maybe go another inning, maybe not, Bruce might use him in that situation.
And I also want to ask about some of these veteran non-starters in camp. I mean, non-roster guys in camp. You know, normally the list of non-roster invitees are players that you kind of have heard about if you've been, like, paying attention to a team that they might have played in, you know, played for, like, 5 years ago. There's a lot more recognizable names on this list, Jimmy Rollins being one of them. What are the chances of any of these guys, Michael Morse, Ruggiano, that Rollins, I mean, to make the team?
I would say Rollins and Michael Morse have definite chances. And they, even though one's a power hitter and the other isn't, they're kind of in the same boat. I think the Giants are going to watch their at-bats really closely here over the next couple of weeks, you know, to see if they can if they can project as good bats off the bench. I mean, the Giants haven't had very good hitting off the bench in recent years, and, you know, they can get a, you know, power hitter in Morse, or maybe just a pesky on-base guy like Rollins. But can either of them do it in the regular season? That remains to be seen.
What's it like for Jimmy Rollins? I mean, how's he been? It's got to be tough for him to, after the success that he's had in his career, to be in spring training with a team that he's not familiar with and to be a guy that's not even guaranteed a spot. That has to be, I don't know, I know some guys just opt to sort of retire rather than try to hang on, like, for one more year. How has he been this spring?
It's been off and on. Also, he's shown a little power recently. And, you know, I thought he was maybe close to the end when he was with the Dodgers a couple of years ago. You know, I've changed my mind. I guess you have the right to change your mind, right? I've changed my mind a little bit about him. I think he can perform defensively. I don't think defense is going to be an issue for him, because if he stays on the team, they'll want him to play some second base. And again, that's something I think he can do. But you know, how do you project whether a guy can do that off the bench? That's a good question. Because, that's mainly the role he would appear in. I'm almost certain of it.
Yeah, it is interesting to see. I mean, he's still, what is he, like 38 years old? I mean, he could have another season left in him, but it's just interesting to watch how, guys opt to, I don't know. I've always found it, like, really sad to, and I've covered, like, I remember covering Turk Wendell, of all people, and he was, like, in Astros spring training. And he was done, you know, but he was like just trying one more spring, and then they released him, and then he just kind of like just went away. And I always like felt bad. I'm like, he had a really nice career, and he's just gone, and nobody, like, that's just the end of it. I don't know. There's something like sad about that there's no more of a final, you know, a finality to it, like more recognition or something.
It's, you know, rarely you get, I mean, I remember Mike Schmidt quit in the, I think it was the 89 season, after like a month or so. He had played in a game against the Giants, actually, at Candlestick Park, and made a couple errors, and then the next day he said, the heck with it. You know, I can't do it anymore. I'm done. So, yeah, I mean, it hits different guys at different times and affects them in different ways. So, there's all kinds of ways to walk out.
I know. Yeah, the ones that get to announce their retirement and get the big send-off, I hope they realize how fortunate they are to be given that kind of privilege, because 95% of these guys, they just kind of go. nobody really notices. Anyway, this has been kind of sad. But Chris, I appreciate the time, and we're going to talk about much happier things next week, much happier occasions next week. So okay,
we will.
All right, thanks, Chris. The Padres have a lot of questions to answer before opening day gets here in a couple of weeks, but it seems like they're well on their way to figuring things out. Let's talk to AJ Casavell about all of that. I am Allison Footer. AJ, you have a nice article about just kind of where the Padres are at this point of the spring, what they knew coming in, what we've learned after watching them a couple of weeks. So I guess maybe the infield, is that something that the clouds are clearing a little bit? The answers might be around the corner.
Yeah, I think the answers are coming. They're not really clear yet. It's more the middle of the infield than anything else. Shortstop's been up in the air pretty much all of camp. I think everyone thought Luis Sardinas was the favorite, mostly because he's the young guy and he's the guy who's on the 40-man roster. So Eric Ibar is a nice piece, but if the Padres are trying to get younger, Sardinas is probably the favorite. That said, Ibar's probably had a better spring. So everything we've heard, they're pretty much neck and neck, and it'll come down to the last couple weeks. Second base is a little more interesting because Ryan Schimpf has been out with oblique tightness. Corey Spangenberg's been okay with Schimpf out. But Yanjer Solarte has been at the World Baseball Classic playing for Team Venezuela. And I think what the Padres want to find out is whether he's best suited for second base or third base. And they haven't really had a chance to play him at second base yet because he's been away with Team Venezuela. But they have been playing Spangenberg at third, and he's looked very good over there. Ryan Schimpf, in his brief time at third base last year, also looked good. So right now they have a little bit of a conundrum in terms of picking between those two guys and Schimpf and Spangenberg, and then where exactly do they put them, second or third base? Because Solarte is going to have playing time no matter where it is, either second base or third base, he's going to play. It's just a matter of which spot, and then when he has that spot locked down, who else plays where. So I would guess that the Padres want at least one of those three guys to be able to kind of slide back and forth between third and second pretty consistently. It's not exactly a matchup thing because they can all hit right-handed pitching pretty well. The two of them are lefties and Solarte is a switch hitter. But it'll just be interesting to see how that unfolds, especially when Solarte gets back from the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, absolutely. And then moving kind of to the outfield, there's a lot of intrigue there. So where are they with the decision-making process with the outfielders?
I think they're a little further behind in the outfield only because there's just question marks with Alex Dickerson, whose back's been flaring up on him right when they thought they were going to get him back, and they did get him back for a game at designated hitter. His back spasmed up again, so they're still getting that checked out. He's questionable now for opening day. Manuel Margot is he's been battling some knee soreness. The Padres think it's fine, but the question is, does that hold him back at all? Does the missed time jeopardize his roster chances at all? Especially because when you consider what the time that Margot and Dickerson have missed, Jabari Blash has slid right in and hit 5 Cactus League home runs, which is either leading the Cactus League or is tied for the Cactus League lead. If someone I didn't check to see if anyone hit one today yet, but it's either leading the league or tied for it. So Jabari Blash has been outstanding. He was on the outside looking in coming into camp. Now I would have to say, if you look at kind of the way the roster's shaping up and the way Alex Dickerson and Margot are down with injuries, Margot, obviously, if they hold him back by an extra couple weeks at the start of the season, they would get an extra year of team control, so there might be a little bit of incentive to play that out. Plus, he's only 22 and could use the minor league seasoning. So I think 3 weeks ago, it didn't look good for Jabari Blash on the roster. Now, I would put his chances maybe at or above 50%. So the outfield has a lot of question marks to be answered, most of them with injuries. And then with Blash, it's whether he can sustain what he's done.
Yeah, it's kind of disheartening to hear Margot's having injury issues. I mean, even if they're not like overly concerned about it, but a knee, did he have a collision or something? Or was it just like did he land on it wrong? What happened with his knee?
It was just running out of the box, and it's swollen a little bit. I think the swelling has gone down all the way, and he's pretty much back to baseball activities. So it's not super concerning now. I think what's more concerning is whether the time he missed, whether he missed too much time to be, I guess, ready for opening day. So the Padres haven't shown a whole lot of concern. Until he's back on a baseball field, I understand a lot of the fans will be concerned, but it. it seems relatively minor. There's nothing structural wrong with it.
Okay, so I want to talk about the rotation. I need to ask the question, though. Jalice Chacin, what is it about Jalice Chacin, I think I'm saying his name right, that has given him so many chances? Because he goes from team to team, and I'm sure he's, you know, a lovely person, but he's never produced any kind of significant performances, like contributions, and I don't understand why he's continuing to get chances. Maybe I'm being kind of rough on him, but it just seems like after a couple of years of not really doing much, and here he is, like, in the mix for a starting job. What do you think of him?
Well, I mean, I think that's a fair criticism. I think in 2013 he had a pretty good season with the Rockies, but for three seasons he hasn't really done anything.
Right.
So the Padres have an answer to that question, and they think they won't say out loud what they're planning on doing with his pitch sequencing and with his pitch selection, but they basically think that he hasn't been throwing the right pitches in the right spots. And if you read between the lines, his slider is one of the best sliders in baseball. Opponents hardly ever hit it. I want to say, I know the batting average is below 200, and I think I want to say it's something like 150. He hasn't been throwing that pitch all that much throughout his career. He's only throwing it like 18% of the time. So if you look at what the Padres did last season with Drew Pomeranz and his curveball, they basically said, hey, this is your best pitch. You need to be throwing it more. If you can get it up around 40% of the time, hitters aren't going to be able to hit it. So why not? Because Drew Pomeranz is at a similar – he was at a stage in his career where he hadn't had a whole lot of success recently. So I'm not totally sure that that's exactly the Padres' plan, to pepper the slider as much as possible with Chacin, but it would make sense if that's what they're looking at in terms of tinkering with his pitch selection. So they want to see what he can do if he throws his slider more frequently than one-fifth or one-sixth of the time. It's a very good pitch. Other than that, his other pitches nothing particularly jumps off the page. So Chacin's more of a project right now. He hasn't had a whole lot of success recently. He was very good during the 2013 season in Colorado. I think his numbers there were better than they look, just because of where he pitched and the fact that he threw 200 innings in Coors Field. But I mean, this is a big season for him. If he doesn't prove himself this year, you've got to wonder if it's ever going to happen.
Okay. Well, that makes a little more sense. So sometimes it takes like maybe a different style of coaching, something you can get through to him a little bit better, maybe instilling some confidence in an area where maybe he's lacking, or just something that might click. So I guess when he has the stuff, like you say, he has that slider, then he's just going to keep getting opportunities as long as he just still continues, I guess, to show that potential.
Yeah, and I think that's what the Padres are looking at. I mean, they took on an experiment last year in Drew Pomeranz, and he ended up pitching all-star caliber, and in some cases, it hasn't worked out. They've done some similar things. Right now, Paul Clemens is probably on the outside of the rotation mix looking in, and they had kind of the same philosophy with Drew Pomeranz, was, hey, throw your curveball more. Well, he's thrown it a little bit more, but he can't necessarily throw it for strikes in the right count. So it's an experiment more than anything else. I don't want to compare Chacin to Clemens or even Pomeranz, because Chacin has four pitches, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see him – his pitch selection changed a lot in 2017.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hear really good things about him as a person, so I'm hoping that, you know, something will click with him. I don't know. I just feel like every year I hear his name like as somebody who's trying to get into a rotation, and I guess I'm not really sure why that's continuing, but you have cleared the air on a lot of that, so thank you very much, AJ. Okay, Jared Cosart, I'm kind of intrigued by him because he was such a top prospect not that long ago, and now he's just struggling to even get any innings, and I know he's coming off of an injury. So is he still in the mix at all?
I think he's definitely in the mix, and I would put his roster chances at very high. The question is if he's going to be in the rotation or maybe as like start the year as a long man out of the bullpen. Ultimately, long-term, he's a rotation guy. He's to me, this spring, probably the one guy that's been overlooked the most just because he's coming off that injury and hasn't pitched yet. He hasn't really had a chance to prove himself, so I think if you're doing the math, you look at the rotation and you say Richard Weaver, Chacin, Perdomo, Cahill, and Perdomo, Cahill being the two that have maybe looked the best this spring. Well, Cosart gets forgotten about because he's only pitched a couple innings. So he's I'm by no means have the eye of a scout, but from what I've seen during his live batting practice and bullpen sessions, is he seems to be pitching a little freer than he was last year. He's told me he seems free. He feels freer because he no longer has that bone spur in his elbow. and that obviously makes a lot of sense. Whether that translates into results on the field for your pitching motion, that remains to be seen. I think he's got he has more things to work on maybe than just his pitching mechanics. He tended last year to let one run inning spiral into three or four run innings, but obviously if you get a bone spur removed from your elbow, I believe it was like five centimeters long, that's going to help in some way when it comes to a free range of motion. So I wouldn't be surprised in the last couple of weeks if he makes some noise in camp.
All right. Interesting stuff. Always interesting with you and the Padres. So, AJ, thank you so much. We will catch up with you next week. Thanks. The Rockies' optimism may have been just a little bit with a rash of injuries that seems to have swept through camp. Let's talk to Thomas Harding about all of that. I'm Allison Footer. Thomas, I don't know where to start, so we'll just pick one. Catcher Tom Murphy.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Fracture on his forearm. So what's going on with that, and what kind of opportunities open up for other guys?
Yeah, this is one of those interesting ones because, you know, catchers have that reputation for being very tough. Well, he takes a backlash from Anthony Rizzo, stays in the game, and the next thing you know, what, 2 days later, they say his arm is broken. So he's out 4 to 6 weeks. Tony Walters, who caught very well for this team last year and had a good season offensively from the All-Star break on, you know he's there. Dustin Garneau, who's come up the last 2 years, he's having a nice spring. So the question is, does he become the backup catcher, or do the Rockies dip into that international brotherhood of backup catchers and get one of the guys who's been floating around for a while? As we speak also, Derek Norris is out there on the market. He was released by the Washington Nationals. Do you look at that, or do you say, hey, Tom Murphy will be back. We trust our young catching. We trust the catching that's gone through the system, and this is what we'll go with. I mean, I think it's actually very important decision for general manager Jeff Breidich, because they put a lot of capital and emotional capital into developing their own players. Well, Murphy's one of their top prospects, and you've got Garneau, who's been in the system for a long time and had a couple of major league shots. Do you kind of recruit over them, or do you say, hey, you've been here, you've done what we've asked, and especially in Garneau's case, you're having a good spring, let's go with you.
Yeah, when it comes to catching, I mean, like you said, I mean, that's not something that you can really just sort of piece together. To have, like, weak catching can affect so many areas of your team. You really have to really be diligent about how you're evaluating and how you're evaluating realistically how long Murphy's going to be out.
Right, and it's a very interesting situation because when you look at the numbers, not just in the major leagues, but in the minors, and there are so many advanced numbers out there for catching, Tony Walters is excellent, and Dustin Garneau in the small snippets in the major leagues, he would be probably one of the best throwers of runners on the bases, and he does pretty well defensively there. And also, Tom Murphy is not bad defensively, and you always look askew at a catcher's defense because when he's really an offensive guy, and Murphy certainly has power. So they actually have some talent there. And here's the other thing that I find fascinating because this is spring training. At the end of the winter meetings, they drafted a guy named Anthony Bemboom from the Angels in the Rule 5 minor league phase of the draft. This guy wasn't protected at the AAA level, but Bud Black knew him because he had been with the Angels last year in the front office. And he's come in and looked pretty good, actually hit a couple of home runs. He was a catch-and-throw guy. So Anthony Bemboom, who wasn't protected at the AAA level as we sit right now, is one foul tip or one backlash away from the major leagues. This is why I love this sport.
Okay, moving on to Ian Desmond, which, my goodness, this is just terrible news, given that they are just a couple months removed from signing him to a really long-term contract. Now he's got a broken hand. What happened, and what's the prognosis for him?
Yeah, you're right. This was terrible in all cases because the Reds prospect, Rookie Davis, that's his first name, Rookie, he's out there on the mound. And he gets a double early in the game, but he twists his ankle going into second. Well, guess what? Anthony DeScalvini has an elbow problem with the Reds. So Rookie Davis is like, I can get on the team. He's pitching through this ankle problem, throws a pitch because he can't put any weight on it, hits Ian Desmond in the hand, and suddenly a 5-year, $70 million player is out for an extended period of time because a young guy who would blame him for wanting to make the team? But he throws a pitch he probably shouldn't have been trying to throw at that point. So what happens with the Rockies is Mark Reynolds, whom they signed on a minor league contract, he was the primary first baseman last year, didn't have a market. He signs a minor league deal, and suddenly he finds himself starting at first base for the Rockies. So really, it's no different from last season. You kind of take a couple of steps back, because with Ian Desmond, he was a good bat handler, and he could run on the bases. He stole around 20 bases a year. He could do the hit and run and things like that. Mark Reynolds really isn't that type of hitter, but the one thing Mark Reynolds showed last year was that he could hit for average, which he did not do previously in his career, and he could draw some walks. So he had I think it was 365, 385, I don't remember, on-base percentage, which was a career high. So you have a decent offensive player, just not as versatile as Ian Desmond.
So basically, to round off the injuries, there's also the bullpen has been affected. So Chris Russon has an oblique strain. And what's the update on him?
Okay, yeah, I was talking to Bud Black this morning, and he has a chance to get back to opening day, but maybe not. Russon actually was being considered for the starting rotation, and his experience would have helped quite a bit. Also, he pitched very well early on, but he suffers an oblique injury, I think, on March 1st, and so he's been down for a bit. So here's the interesting thing that could happen. There is a real competition at the back of the bullpen. Kyle Freeland, he's pitched very well. So has Antonio Senzatella. Jeff Hoffman, whom they got in the Tulo trade, has pitched pretty well. He's faced some good competition, not as eye-popping as the other guys. And also, Germán Márquez, who they got from Tampa last year and finished the season strong, he's in that. Bud Black said this morning that there is a possibility that one of the young guys who doesn't make the rotation could go into that bullpen spot that Chris Russon was going to slide into if Chris Russon isn't ready. So it creates some opportunities for other guys.
That being said, there is still a regular season that's coming up here very quickly. And, you know, I'm looking at the Rocky schedule. I mean, you know, they have the Brewers. And the Padres, I mean, they have a couple of, you know, D-backs at the end of the month. But they also have, like, the Dodgers and the Giants and the Nationals. They can't afford to bury themselves, like, coming right out of the chute if they're going to be able to compete in this division. I know there may be some high hopes that they would have been contenders for that wild card spot. A strong start was kind of essential for them, but that's really in jeopardy right now.
I guess so. But the one thing that they tried to do, because what happened to them last year was, they were okay front-line-wise, and after May, they pitched very well in the starting rotation. They struggled in the bullpen, and they had some depth issues as they went. So let's go around and look at the depth situation now. In left field, David Dahl, they wanted to see what the first-round pick could do, but he has a rib issue, and he's out. But yet you have Gerardo Parra, who looks like he's come back from a very bad previous season. You go to first base, and you've got Mark Reynolds there, not a bad guy to slide in while you're without Ian Desmond for an extended period of time. They're young catching, and it was going to be young anyhow. Those guys do pretty well defensively. So you're actually looking at some depth, and we didn't talk about them, and it's a really difficult situation with Chad Bettis, the testicular cancer. It did spread to a lymph node, so he's going to undergo some chemotherapy, and everybody's pulling and praying for him. But with all the young pitching that they have, they're able to cover for that one. So what the Rockies did, they didn't do a whole lot. Of course, you know, Ian Desmond was a big signing. And a couple of the bullpen signings, Mike Dunn and Greg Holland, they were big signings. But beyond that, what they wanted to do was make sure they were covered in the case of injury. And if you look at it, Parra for Dahl, Reynolds for Reynolds for Desmond, and what's going on in the pitching rotation, it looked like they may be able to withstand these injuries for a bit. So I don't think these injuries alone will bury them. One thing I'll say about the National League West, and granted, the Rockies aren't the Giants or the Dodgers, but it seems like every single year one of those teams is very poor out of the gate, but yet they're there at the end. So even if you do struggle a bit early, if you get everybody back and the people you're counting on play well, you've got a chance. So I don't think that that there's reason for panic here, although certainly you would rather go into the season at full strength.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for them. And it is your birthday today, so have a wonderful birthday, Thomas. And thank you. We'll catch up with you next week.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm just thankful that I'm not on the disabled list here.
Me too. We need you at full strength at all times, Thomas. The Dodgers are getting ready for opening day, just like everybody else. A couple weeks left to go in spring training. A few injury issues here and there, so let's talk about that with Ken Gernick. I'm Allison Futter. Ken, let's talk Corey Seager a little bit. So he's got this oblique strain. Seems to be lingering a bit, not getting a whole lot of playing time. So what's the update with him, and do you think he's still on track to start the season on time?
It's hard to tell. He hasn't played in a long time, and it's lingering, just like you said. So if you can tell me when it'll stop lingering, when it'll start playing, I'll tell you if he'll be ready for opening day. Right now it's kind of a mystery. They're giving us no information other than it's getting better. But he hasn't played in 2 weeks, so must not be getting that much better. Got 2.5 weeks to get ready for opening day.
So would he be able to, I mean, I don't know, there was like, he mentioned like maybe getting minor league at-bats. I mean, I guess he kind of maybe amplify things a little bit, like if he's you know, toward the end of spring training. I mean, there are still ways to get this done if he shows health-wise that he's able to. There are minor league at-bats to get and things like that. So I guess that's a little bit optimistic that he might be able to go that way.
Well, I guess it's a possibility. The only problem is, swinging a bat usually is really bad for obliques. You know, I don't know how he'll be able to catch up, so to speak, because it's not like he's going to, you know, start taking 10 at-bats a game off an oblique injury. So it's, I think that they've been downplaying it, but I think it's, it's something to be concerned about because when obliques linger, and definitely when they recur, they're serious 4 to 6 week injuries. So, they're dealing with something that has the potential of being a real problem. And I guess they're trying to be conservative, but there's no way to know when it'll heal.
Yeah, no doubt. With obliques, the one thing that you can't do is rush it. You have to stop all movement unless you just want to keep pulling at that muscle. So, okay, well, let's move on to Rich Hill, who's not really having a great spring. So I know we don't look too much at spring stats to judge someone, especially a veteran guy, especially someone who's locked into a long-term contract. But still, is it a little disconcerting that he seems to be walking a lot of guys, just doesn't seem to be in a rhythm?
Yeah, very disconcerting. He's had a history of not pitching well in spring, but he's also had a history of a lot of injuries. He says he's healthy, but he has really no fastball command, doesn't know where it's going. You know, he's got a few more starts left to work it out, but he hasn't made a whole lot of progress here this spring so far.
I was reading what you wrote about Brock Stewart, and right shoulder tendonitis, so they shut him down for about a week. But what's concerning to me is, like, he had a major increase in innings pitched from 2015 to 2016, so 101 to 149. So that, I guess, I don't know, that's not set off an alarm bell with me. You know, do you think that that could be an issue and that might have contributed to it, or do you think that, they feel pretty confident it's just going to be a week?
No, I think it's going to be longer than a week. He may not pitch again for them during the spring, you know, depending on how long it takes. But, he did have a big jump in innings, and, you know, that's why they're being so super cautious with Julio Urias. You know, he's younger and also had a jump in innings last year. And, from all indications, Urias won't pitch for them in April, even though he's, you know, one of the top two or three starters on the club. For that very reason, they don't want a replay of that with their best young pitcher.
Yeah, no doubt. They have to be so careful this time of year, too. So Ross Stripling, it seems like he's probably headed toward the bullpen. When I read about the Dodgers, I know that they have all this depth, but I also feel like, I mean, we've been doing these for a long time now, and there's always some kind of, injury issues that have really plagued the rotation. So I would think that somebody, like a guy like Ross Stripling, probably has in the back of his mind that he's probably going to have an opportunity to start, even if it looks like his best chance, I guess, is in the bullpen at this point.
For sure, at this point it is, and maybe that's where he winds up. You know, I think that coming off, history of Tommy John surgery, and from what they saw of him in the later innings, maybe they're just not that confident that that he has the body to be a starting pitcher. He certainly is effective. He has the pitch mix, but then also right now they're deep in starters, and their relievers are questionable. So you know, for the most part, they're sliding him in to where they need him the most and where he would figure to have the best chance to make the major league team. He's not going to make this starting rotation. So if he's going to make this team, it's going to be in the bullpen.
Yeah. And then there's 6 months to get through, so anything can happen. Okay. Thank you for the updates, Ken. Talk to you soon.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.